There is more going on than you know. There are unseen universal forces at work. The law of attraction is just one universal law that plays a part in shaping your reality. But there's so much more to know. If you knew how to engage all the universal forces, you could deliberately create the life of your dreams. Joshua, a group of non-physical teachers, explains the laws of the universe and how the mechanisms of physical reality actually work. They are channeled by Gary Temple Bodley, and each week, Gary and a group of students discuss how they are affecting and enhancing their lives every single day. This is the expansion of the law of attraction. This is the teachings of Joshua Roundtable. We're thrilled you're here.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Teachings of Joshua Roundtable. I'm your host, Gary Temple Bodley. Today, we're going to talk about helping people. We all have this desire to uplift, inspire, and help others. If you're listening to this program at all, you're probably, well, you're certainly in the group of teachers. And as a teacher, you have this, thing that you think is right. And that thing is to help others. And we all have it, and we all... every time we see someone, we want to offer our advice, or we want to, ease their troubles, or make them feel better, or uplift them, or whatever. But what are we really doing when we help people? When you see someone who's struggling, you're looking at them from this limited perspective. And that limited perspective is based on fear that they can't do it themselves. And so you want to jump in and give them the hand that you think they need. But that is just an urge to control the conditions, right? So today we're going to talk about how you really help people. And it's sort of what Joshua does with us. Joshua does not see us as limited in any way. Joshua sees us as perfect. So they're not trying to help us. They're just showing us a different perspective. And from that perspective, that's where we really gain the benefit. So we'll have a question from Alette today on how to help people. And joining us, as always... is the famous Kyla Hinton.
Hi, Gary.
And the one that speaks with animals, Wendy Pierce.
Hey, Gary.
And Mark Shahada is off on vacation.
Yeah.
So we hope to have him back next week. No, he's not really on vacation. He's studying for some test, which we all said, Mark, the answers are within, are to be found within. You don't have to study. Just bring them forth from the non-physical through you.
But allow. He doesn't believe any allow. Of this stuff, right? Yeah. He has trouble allowing things to happen. He wants to control it all.
He wants to make things happen.
Yeah, he does. He does.
So we are having a lot of fun talking about Mark behind his back. Okay. Yeah. So that seems like a disparity. You shouldn't talk about someone behind their back and make fun of them. But yet it's so fun to do. So the fun part tells us that that is appropriate. We're totally aligned with our highest selves in making fun of Mark.
You guys are.
Oh, see, so Kyla feels a little bit bad inside.
I'm experiencing some resistance.
I know that Mark knows that we all love him unconditionally. So anything we can say could only be for him and to his benefit.
Right. Yeah. Yes, we're helping him by teasing him.
That's right.
That's right.
Right. We're making light of it so that he can relax.
I drove up to North Carolina with my friend Bruce one time, and we had this 3-hour long conversation about helping people. And he was like placed in his trajectory where he sees injustice everywhere. And his like big thing is to cure injustice.
Oh, wow.
And so when you think about how the universe works and what we all know now, we know that there is no injustice, that everyone's getting, feedback in the form of the conditions and, their vibration is creating this illusion of injustice. And Bruce wants to jump in there and save people all the time. He's always done this, right? He's always, a lot of times he'll get himself in trouble by doing it. In fact, physically going in and saving somebody, it doesn't seem like it works a lot of times for him.
Mm.
And so I was explaining that when you see someone who you think is in need, you're looking at them from a limited perspective. Based obviously from our perspective as humans, we only know what we know from our experience. And so we see someone else struggling and we say, I would not want to be in that position. What can I do to help them out of that position? Because I wouldn't want to be there.
Right.
And we don't realize that they're going through an experience that they've, you know, somehow manifested for their benefit. And we can't see what that benefit is over the long term.
Right.
And so what, to really help them is to see them as perfect, as going through something that's for them. And what we'll learn in this question is what we're not supposed to do is get them out of that situation. Oh. We're supposed to ease them through the situation. You know, help them see another perspective so that they can go through that in clarity rather than in confusion.
Yep.
But you guys as mothers see that with your kids all the time. They get themselves in some kind of situation, and you want to get them out of the situation.
Yeah.
Do you ever let them go through it now?
Now, yeah. I mean, now that my my aircraft carrier has turned around and turned into a jet ski.
So that aircraft carrier analogy is, you know, this momentum of your beliefs heading you in this one direction. And it's really hard to change directions because the aircraft carrier has a lot of momentum. So over time, listening to Joshua, talking about Joshua, we tend to shrink the size of that momentum, shrink the size of that boat so we can get into a jet ski size so we can, you know, let our beliefs be malleable and understand more stuff and actually integrate it into our lives in action.
That analogy was so helpful for me because in the beginning, when I first started getting into this stuff, I did see a lot of really quick shifts in some ways, you know, but then I expected it to be like that all the time. And around the time that that came up, you know, they were talking about how it's this gigantic ship. And the first thing before you can expect anything else to happen, you have to shut off the engine, you know, and then turn the wheel. And there are these things that like, where you're taking steps, but you're not necessarily seeing the results right away, but it doesn't mean that nothing's happened. Like you're in the process. So that was really helpful for me.
Yeah, me too.
Still probably.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah. You know, I always think about when I was younger, I had really strong beliefs in things, you know, and I can see myself like, you know, really holding onto those beliefs and arguing with people and not adjusting those beliefs at all. And my life kept hitting a wall. And now my beliefs are so flexible that I believe everybody, pretty much. You know? So I've gone to the other extreme, which is probably just as bad. but
I think go ahead. I was just going to say, I think there's something to that. And that, like, one of my things is like sometimes I find the line by crossing it. So I'll go to one end of the spectrum and then the other end and explore both so that I can figure out where the middle is.
Yeah. So you'll say, I'll say, you know, I will now believe anything you tell me. And then I want to sort of try it myself. But I listen to Joe Rogan podcast and someone will come on and say that brain or psycho meds don't work. If you read all the studies, they don't work at all. You know, there's the side effects way outweigh any benefit, right? And then you hear someone say, well, lithium really helped me.
Yeah.
And lithium turns out is a salt. It's not even a drug. Did you guys know that?
Wow.
Yeah.
No.
And then I go, okay, I believe this person. Now I believe that person. Well, who am I supposed to believe, right? And then now I believe that lithium is not really a drug. It's a salt. So I believe that. You know? And then, but then, you know, then a guy comes on and says that this group of people just eats meat only.
Yeah.
And I had always had this belief that red meat was really bad for me, that it causes cancer and all this stuff. And then you sort of find out that, well, that depends on the kind of meat you're eating. Are you eating cheeseburgers and french fries and smoking cigarettes and drinking beer while you're doing it? Or are you eating grass-fed beef, you know, with no sugar in your diet? And so now I'm like moving to that direction. But I don't know. I was thinking the other day, I don't know if that's true or not. There's no way to know, you know?
No. Nope.
I haven't even Googled if that's true. I just listen to it and take the guy's word for it.
So the lesson here is when Gary tells you something, always take it with a grain of salt.
With a grain of lithium.
All I'm doing is all I'm doing in Joshua is telling you what Joshua says, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and then I have experience with it. that works for me personally. But does it work for everyone? I don't know. You know.
That's so the point that I've gotten to when I'm hearing people tell me things is I believe that they believe it. I believe that it's possible. Mm-hmm. I think I have very few beliefs that I like hold to, you know, and even then those, it's like, I'm fully aware that I'm choosing them. I don't know whether they're true or not, but I'm choosing them. That's what I choose to believe because it is working for me in this moment.
Right. And so I don't know. The only thing that I think the thing that matters most is if the belief is beneficial to you mm-hmm. at the time. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. But that still not to be holding on to it so hard, because if you hold on to it so hard, I think that you, let stuff go through you that could be beneficial, but if it doesn't align with your beliefs, you're not going to let it in.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Right. You have to have an open perspective.
Right. As open.
The what if. I still go back to the what if game. What if they're right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What if that's it? Yeah. What if? What if they're wrong? What if?
It does seem like if you can allow yourself to have your beliefs as malleable as possible, then you can incorporate this information.
Yeah.
You know, because
go ahead.
It's just like you have to get to a certain hump in here. Mm. You know, you have to believe and take in, and then you get to this hump and you go, oh, okay, now that makes sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking, I mean, I found this, a lot of us, I think, found this type of information and other things because we are seekers, you know? And I find that the more malleable my beliefs are, the more open I am to new information from any source, going into every interaction as if there's something for me to learn, the more I learn, you know? So when somebody comes to me, and when I had beliefs that were more closely held, it hurt or it was, you know, offensive when people challenged them.
Yeah.
And I welcome that now. I was in a conversation with a person that I never met before, and we were having just this philosophical, and he was a little bit almost timid. You know, I don't want to criticize or challenge. And I was like, please do, because that helps me figure out whether or not I actually believe it, whether or not it actually is serving me, whether or not it's something that I want to carry forward with me. So challenge away. I love to be educated. So and he did like open my mind up to a new way of seeing something, and it was beneficial.
Well, that whole idea of letting your beliefs be malleable, flexible, gives you this stance of curiosity. And so which is so much more allowing than the resistant stance of holding on to beliefs, which is more controlling, right?
Yep.
So if you have really strict, tightly held beliefs, that's just a form of control. And if you have open beliefs, that's a form of allowing.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And going back to the old turn your cheek, turn just a little bit and look from a different perspective and examine that belief. Is it still something that you believe in?
This individuality thing that we have makes it seem as if everyone's experiencing the same thing you are.
Yeah.
Right? But it's so false.
That concept, that one blows my mind. It's like nobody else has any clue what we're thinking.
That's so true. I feel like the opposite is true. I feel like it's true. Nobody understands our unique individual experience, but that's an experience that is universal. Everybody feels like nobody knows what they're going through.
Yeah. Everyone thinks that they know what the other person is going through.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's also easier for us to see what are the hangups of the other people.
Yeah.
You know, if you're ever in a Joshua Live.
I point out everybody else's quote unquote fault.
Yeah, isn't it like easy? Like when I remember when we were doing Joshua Live and Tracy was questioned, what's the inspiration? You know, she really loves Bikram yoga. What's the inspiration? You know, and she couldn't even say what it was, but I'm thinking I know what it is, and you probably are all thinking it's so obvious, it's right there, you know.
It's I like didn't know.
Other people.
I think she wants to
become a teacher, you know.
Oh.
And, but she really didn't want to go there because, you know, how could she do this and that? And all
with that comes some commitment, and she's got to hold up to it. Yeah. Why aren't you teaching yet?
She has to go and take the course, and she has to travel to a place, and she doesn't have the money for that, you know, all those things. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, so, when I was, you know, always, you know, at the, all the Abraham seminars, it was like the people in the chair, the whole audience, and Abraham would say, do you all know what's going on here? And we're all like, you know, yeah. You could see what that person couldn't see in themselves.
Right.
Because they're not attached to it.
Yeah, and that's why it's so good to listen, re-listen to the calls, because every time I catch something different that I didn't hear the first time.
Especially about yourself when you're talking.
Oh, big time, yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah. All right, I'm going to read the quote of the day.
Okay.
You are not being asked to change who you are. We are asking you to become who you really are. You are being a pure positive love and acceptance. Who you really are is one who loves those in your life unconditionally and who accepts the conditions as they are. That's who you really are. If you are behaving in a way that is less than this, you are simply pretending to be someone you are not.
Mm.
Okay. So we are all pretending to be someone
we're just not. Pretenders.
Yeah. Well, although it goes those back times, to like,
I love,
times, right?
Yeah, I
in
love the
times.
Analogy of playing roles. We're all playing roles for each other. Yeah. I love that analogy. It's like, you know, when somebody's doing something that's really messing with you or you're really upset or whatever, how amazing is their performance? You know what I mean? It's like if you can just remember that they're here for you, presenting something to you, and just like, wow, that's you're really good at your role. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Well,
isn't it funny to be around someone that you're totally comfortable with who's a friend, and then another friend who you're not as comfortable with.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Like, have you ever had where you have, like, two friends and the three of you get together? And when you're all three together, it's all fun. But when you're just with one other person instead of the other person, there's just two of you, it's a little awkward.
Yeah.
Isn't it weird that that is?
It's bizarre.
Yeah.
Chemistry.
Yeah, and you're different with, obviously, your parents and your friends and your lover and your children. You're different with all these people. You're totally a different person.
Yeah. And, you know, that just brings up an interesting point because that there's no – I don't know. How do we truly know ourselves? I guess we find that we truly know our inner selves through meditation or – I mean, you're always performing in a sense because you're with some another being. You're performing on some level.
So for me, what I'm getting to is that, like, just accepting all of these different performances as different versions of me. Like, not obviously not the true verb, but like me playing the role of Kyla. Sometimes I play it this way. Sometimes I play it that way, you know. But when I've stopped trying to define, well, no, because I'll always be asking, like, who am I?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's what we're here for. Right? You'll never know that totally.
Yeah. That out.
Yeah.
Well, the interesting thing about me is, like, I see you two. And I see the same version of you every time. So I think I know you, right? But I don't know what you're like when you're with, you know, your kids.
With your family.
Right? Mm-hmm. And I guess if I was around you when you were with your kids. Oh, I have a good thing. So Bruce and I were best friends since ninth grade. And he gets this girlfriend, his first girlfriend, Linda. And she was in 12th grade. He was in 11th grade. And he was totally different around Linda than he was around me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You're being so fake. It seemed so fake to me how he was being. But he was just being who he was around Linda.
Right. And it's interesting, too, because we all popped into each other's lives at a point, and we really have no idea, like, who you were before or what you did before or how you were or anything. Right. We just popped into each other's lives. And it's almost like we popped into each other's lives when we were, I'm not going to say needy, but in a sense where we were seeking, you know, we were seeking. And so it was a totally different version. It just blows my mind to try to wrap my head around that stuff.
Yeah. Like if we could go back to the day we first met, you know,
or even before
see how we were like, even that day, because we've all evolved since then too, but we've evolved together.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. So in my quest for authenticity, I used to, what you were talking about, Gary, about how we're different versions of ourselves with different people. I used to think, especially I'll use the version of me that I am here in this context. I was like, that's me. And I need to learn how to be that everywhere. Uh-huh. And I realized that that's not I don't know if it's not possible, but that in each situation, because of the mix of the vibrations or whatever in each interaction, there are just different parts of me that are called forth, you know? So with my kids, there are different parts of me that are called forth there, and there are different parts of me that are called forth here. And so I stop feeling pressured to, I don't know, or stop judging myself for when I do, mm-hmm. Bring different parts of myself forward. But I think there's something too also.
Well, yeah. What's the funny thing is, when I'm doing Joshua Live, I think that in that moment, I'm the most me, the most authentic version of me in that. You know, I don't care what my face looks like. I'm making all these weird faces. I'm exuberant. I'm not holding back at all. And sometimes, right in the middle when I'm doing it, this little picture of me, uh-huh. now, becomes the whole screen.
Oh.
It's like I'm watching this whole screen of me as I'm doing it, you know, and I'm just relaxed in that that's who I really am, you know, in that moment.
Yeah.
Where now, if I was just, I don't see a whole picture of me. I don't even look at this whole picture. I'm looking at you guys. Mm-hmm. But if I saw that whole picture, I'd be critical of the faces I'm making and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because I'd want to be looking good.
Uh-huh. Want you guys to think, I'm looking good.
Yeah.
I just look fresh as a flower at 8 o'clock in the morning. I just wake up looking good. Yeah.
I do.
All right. Well, let's back to our subject here. This is all about helping people. And this one comes from Alette. So, Wendy, would you like to read for Alette?
Sure.
Oh, Jesus. Did you guys record this at all?
Yep.
Oh, good. All right.
Good job, Kyla.
Good job.
Yeah. Look at me being so responsible.
Look at you. That's right. We're saying call you this responsibility.
Oh, I think I'm recording it too. Okay. Never mind.
I am not recording it, okay?
Okay.
Here we go. Dear Joshua, some time ago, one of my online friends in the internet community told me out of the blue about his life and his present alcohol addiction. He is still young, 26, very nice, easy to talk to, and he reminds me of Ronald. Ronald's her husband, right?
Ronald's her, who died. Yeah, okay. I'm not sure if they were married or not.
Okay, gotcha.
A long-time mate.
Partner, okay. I think that's why I relate to him, but also because he is brutally honest about himself and very open. I'm enjoying our conversations, but usually I wait till he chats me as I don't want to seem intrusive or nosy. However, yesterday I noticed he was online and was inspired to ask him how he was doing, and we talked until I got offline. By the end of this month, he'll be going to a clinic not only for treatment of his alcohol problem, but also of the severe psychological problems he has as a result of his childhood. I've asked him to keep in touch and to let me know how he's doing. There's also a girl who befriended me some years ago when she was still an active user. Now I'm her only online friend, and she specifically comes online to talk to me. We've been talking on and off for maybe 2 or 3 years. She is anorexic and has all kinds of other problems, which we talk about, but also about all kinds of other stuff. I have noticed that I'm able to see both of them as being perfect, just as they are, and to know that they are quite capable of dealing with their problems themselves. I'm no longer inclined to dish out all kinds of solutions or good advice. I just send them love, listen to them, and let them know I'm their friend. Viewing this from the higher perspective, I know they didn't meet me online and become online friends by accident. I feel there is some kind of special bond I have with these two and would like to know what it is. I believe the universe brought us together because I know how things work and can assist them in seeing things from a different perspective. However, I find it difficult to do this without sounding like I know better and playing down their problems, which from their perspective are huge. I totally get how they must feel, even though I can never know how anyone feels and realize how difficult it must be for them to take another perspective. Could you also explain why we met and became friends and what's in it for them and for me? With love, Alette. Yep.
Yeah, so here she is looking at her friends from the perspective that they're perfect.
Yeah.
And just that alone gives her the power to be inspired, to talk to them, you know, when she's inspired to. And then to not give them advice.
And that's probably why they continue to return to her. They feel her non-judgment. They feel her unconditional love.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's why they can both be brutally honest about themselves.
Right. Right. And probably, I mean, what a wonderful gift that she's giving them. Because they probably can't be honest many other places in their lives.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
Okay.
All right. Dear Alette, when you assist someone, you are allowing them to move through their problems. When you help someone, you are trying to fix their problems. Since there is no such thing as a problem, they are all simply valid and expansive experiences. There is nothing to fix. However, as they move through the experience, they can do so in joy or in fear. When you show them the higher perspective, what you are doing is easing their fears.
Okay, so we came to physical reality to expand through experience in joy.
Mm-hmm.
That sentence there is the reason we're here. To expand through experience in joy. And the joy part is a choice. So from a limited perspective, you're going to expand through contrast and fear. But from a higher perspective, you can see that the experience is for you. And as you move through that experience, you can keep your perspective high, high, high. And, you know, joy is that word where you're thinking of dancing and singing and everything is. But joy is really also, you know, reading a good book is joy because you're enjoying something. And interest is joy. So if you can move through contrast with the stance of curiosity and interest, well, that is joy. And that will make you feel better as you go through things.
I think that's a really important point, especially when it comes to like real life stuff like that, you know, like addiction or things where it feels really real, where it feels really serious, where it's hard to look at that from somebody who doesn't have all of this background of knowledge and say, how can you say that's not a problem? How can you say that that somebody should have joy in that? I think that's an important point to say that it's not necessarily like in the midst of what feels like trauma that you have to be like dancing and singing about it. But yeah, that stance of just like curiosity and interest and just, okay, all right, well, what do I have to get out of all of this?
Let's imagine that you're going through that challenge or that experience and that your choices are to go through in fear or in a state of interest and curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
You can just know, looking at it, that even if you can get there a little bit, it's going to feel better.
And a lot, for me lately, I've been finding that I find a lot of joy in neutrality, just being neutral and choosing. A lot of it has to come to how you choose to view the situation. It's all, ultimately, if we strip everything away, all we have is our choice. Our choice to choose to feel good, our choice to choose to feel bad, or our choice to feel neutral.
Right.
Oh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, people don't understand what's really happening in that moment. Because if you're caught up in this, you know, victim mentality of the old approach to life, you're thinking, this is happening to me, not for me.
Or to look at, like, this situation, like, oh, my gosh, a poor thing. You know, there's anorexic, alcoholic. It's like, poor thing versus looking at them as a beautiful being of unconditional love and acceptance and limitless and seeing their pure being. That is the best gift you could give to anyone, is to seeing them as their inner selves.
And the whole experience of alcoholism or anorexia, of which I know nothing about. Okay. But from my know-nothing point of view, it seems like it's all about your perspective, right? So you look at yourself in the mirror and you think you're fat, which I do every day, by the way. But it's just a perspective, you know. And then so you start to get, well, you know, your body is not, you sort of have a different perspective about your body, that your body is your spacesuit that you walk around in, that you chose this body, the body's perfect as it is. Those are all perspective things, you know. And if you have body issues, it's coming from another perspective. So if you can switch that perspective or even gradually turn the knob on that, dial it down a bit. That seems like.
I had a friend, my best friend in high school and college roommate, who dealt with some stuff along those lines. And one of the things that really served her was she went to treatment somewhere and they taught them to see the anorexia itself as something separate from them. Like it was something that she had lived with for so long that she felt like it defined her. Mm-hmm. And so it just reminds me of like our thoughts, seeing how we can choose our thoughts like that, not that we are not defined by our thoughts,
right.
You know?
Right.
And so that was a really powerful tool for her, as seeing it as something, you know, that's not who I am. It's this thing and I can choose how I interact
right.
with it, how
right.
I see it, how I feel about it.
Yeah.
I've started doing that on a daily basis. I mean, I'm not comparing myself to anorexia or anything like that, but I mean, I'll find myself going, like, go into a negative emotion, go into a low point for a moment. And now I'm able to say, oh, okay, this does not define me. I'm going to allow it to flow through me. Isn't it interesting? Let's see why did this come up? All right, let's feel that for a minute. But the whole thing of one of the biggest things I've gotten from Joshua is nothing defines me. Where, like you're saying, Kyla, I used to think, this emotion, I'm lonely. I'm a lonely person. You know what I mean? It's like, no, it's just an emotion flowing through me at this moment.
Right.
Don't hold on to it and it'll move, you know?
Yeah.
I'm starting to see this with cravings.
Where
are those cravings coming from?
Like, yeah.
Craving to have a glass of wine at a certain time. Like, I don't feel any craving to have wine right now at all.
Uh-huh.
If you put wine in front of me, I wouldn't drink it. I could care less.
Right.
It's 11 o'clock in the morning or 12 o'clock in the morning, you know. But 6 o'clock,
it's like,
you put wine
in front
of me at 6 o'clock. No way. I mean, I'd have to really sit there and do it. And so now I've pushed it back to, say, 6:30. I'm like, that time between 6 and 6:30, how often do I look at the clock? You know, look at that thing. And I mean, this is a crazy, crazy thing, you know. And then I can have two glasses of wine and be fine, right? And then it goes away. And then, but if I'm out with friends and stuff, and we're just having a good time, then someone gives me another glass of wine, and then I'm having that. And then I know that I won't sleep as well, and I'll be a little groggy the next morning. Friday night a week ago, we were out with friends, and we had some wine with dinner. And then other friends came by, and we met them, and we went to their house. And I happened to have wine in the car from the store, so I brought in a bottle of wine there. And then... The one guy whose house it was is a rum connoisseur. And so we're doing this rum tasting. And I'm like, this is fun. And I go, oh, my God. And that's the night before I got this cold that I still have now. It's like, you know, all those things led up. All this stuff is happening. It's so weird. Like, I couldn't just say, no, you had your two glasses of wine. That's fine. You know,
yeah.
Of course it was fun and everything. But I'm 55 years old. I can't handle that anymore.
Well, is that a belief, though? Is that
a belief?
Is it affecting you because you believe it will?
Well, yeah, maybe. You know, there's a lot of parts of that. You know, maybe it is. Maybe it is. But it's interesting. What I'm thinking about is, where's this urge coming from? Whether it's also, if we have dessert every night after dinner, then I have this craving for dessert after dinner. But if we skip four nights, then I don't have it at all, you know? And, of course, we go out somewhere and someone gets dessert and we start that whole cycle up again. But what is that craving about, and how come some cravings are irresistible? Like when I smoked, it was irresistible.
Yeah.
And some cravings are no big deal. And where do they come from?
Oh.
And how come we're sort of powerless against them?
I know for me, it's almost like It can be a numbing mechanism. It can be a distraction mechanism. It can be something to take you out of really looking or feeling where you are in the moment.
But also it's a enhancing thing too.
I think sometimes it's one or the other, and sometimes it is both. I think the ones that are the hardest to resist are the ones that we've allowed to become habits, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's almost an unconscious.
But what is the habit? You know, the habit. Why are we, if we were in more in control of our thoughts, could we just nix habits? Because I'm way more in control of my thoughts now.
Yeah.
I'm way more able to deal with these urges than I was ever before.
So I think it's possible to just nix habits, but I think it's also, I think it depends on the level of attachment to the habit or to whatever's underneath it, whatever the mm-hmm. beliefs that like resulted in the habit happening or the thoughts, you know? But I think that it could also be with the ones that we're more attached to, like for me in smoking, it's like an aircraft carrier, you know, where it's going to take mm-hmm. me some time.
Yeah.
And I have to have a desire even.
Well, that's why cold turkey is so ineffective for people.
Yes.
Yeah, I think we gotta shrink the size of the aircraft carrier.
Yeah.
For me, well, and work through like what that means to you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's a meaning there. I do it with sugar. So it's like that meaning there for me is it's comforting. Mm-hmm. I think it calms me. It feels good. I'm doing something that just for me kind of thing. So I mean, all these limiting beliefs that I have swirling around that, like the aircraft carrier, slowly but surely I have to look at each of those limiting beliefs, prove them false, adopt a new belief, and then try to go a little bit in that direction, a little bit in that direction each time.
So when we look at someone who's got anorexia or alcoholism, it's the same thing. It's just
they're just way down.
Just, you know, it's the same exact thing. And maybe it just, you know, manifests itself in that area, and we can't understand what that feeling is.
Sure.
Yeah.
And of course, don't leave out worthiness.
Yeah.
Sign of everything.
For me, what makes the most sense is that with all of these things, with addictions, whether it's working or smoking or alcohol or whatever, with just like everything else, anything that we're trying to manifest, it's always the feeling behind the thing that we're doing. So if we could figure out what feelings are underneath these impulses to reach for things and address those, with anorexia, I think a lot of it is like, or I guess this is more like bulimia, but like relief, you know? So they eat, and then they like, the feeling of throwing up brings them, the person that I knew that had this experience, it brought her relief. And so she was like chasing that feeling of relief.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's similar with alcohol, you know, with people who use it in that way. They're like wanting some relief from this weight, from this pressure that they're carrying around. So for me, when smoking, I've realized that like, for me, it's come to represent time by myself, you know, and all of these different things. And so I'm aware of that now. So I had been having that awareness gives me the choice in those moments when I feel that urge come up that I know that what I actually want is relief. So I can get relief through the cigarette and that's okay or not, you know, or I can get relief through something else where I can just decide to feel relief, like just conjure the feeling of relief. So
right. Well, even going back to Gary talking about enhancing, as like a glass of wine is enhancing your experience, you're doing the same thing. You're thinking you need that wine to feel good, to get you to that place of being fun and carefree, you have to do is choose.
Yeah, and I would say also that relief is a big part of it, and
relief
really is the penultimate, the top pinnacle emotion, right?
Yeah,
that is the best emotion. Listening to a podcast the other day, and they were being driven by a driver, and they're in the back seat, and they're being taken somewhere, and it's cold, and the driver chauffeur decides to overtake this truck in front of them, but there's black ice, and so loses control, and the front of the car goes in underneath the truck, and then turns around. And the back of the car goes into the truck. And it spits them out. And in that moment, he thought, okay, well, I'm dead. You know, this is how I die.
This is how I die.
And it spits them out, and they shoot into the median and stop in the median, right?
Mm.
And they're all fine. And he said, if I could do that experience once a year, I would love it. Because it was the most intense feeling of relief, which is the best feeling he's ever felt in his life.
Yeah.
I think about that movie where they're going in to free the hostages in Iran. With
Zero
Ben Affleck.
Dark 30? Is that Zero called? Dark 30 or whatever?
No. I can't remember the name of it. But anyway, so they have to do all this stuff to get the hostages out, and they hide them, and they finally get them into a plane, and they're on the runway, and the hostages must be feeling like, oh my God, we're going to get out of here, we're going to get out of here. And I think even the soldiers were coming on the tarmac as they were taking off. But that, excuse me, the feeling of relief when they got into the air must have been unbelievable.
Yeah.
So I think you're right, we're chasing that feeling of relief.
Yeah, and that's so relief is every single time I go down the shithole and I'm like in this total victim mode, like, why is this happening? Life is so hard. There's a moment, you know, whenever it is that I like make my way back out, when I have like something that snaps me back in or like shifts my perspective, there's this moment of relief where like I come back into me for the first time and I'm like, this is why, like, I mean, there's probably lots of reasons that all of that other stuff is happening, but this feeling makes it all worth it. This relief of coming back into like, oh my God, like I went so far into who I'm not and now I'm back in who I am and it feels so good. That feeling of relief is
which explains all the daredevils, you know. What they're doing is they're putting their life on the line, and then they survive, and they feel relief. Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to be huge. It can be a little thing. You know what I mean? It can be daily things where you just, for a moment, you slip out of who you're not, and when you're able to realize, ooh, this is not who I am, that little bit of relief just kind of fuels your day.
But if you think about it, if you are going for that feeling of relief all the time, then it seems to me that you're constantly creating situations – of peril and drama.
Yeah.
So you can get out of it, you know?
Yeah.
And so maybe relief isn't the feeling you want to go for all the time. Yeah. But, you know, also, when you push past any fear, you feel exhilaration. And is that the same thing as relief?
No.
Didn't screw you up.
Yeah. You could also take it all the way back to self-love, too. You know what I mean? Like, if you're trying to get that feeling of relief, that's all about feeling of loving yourself and accepting yourself, love and acceptance of yourself, versus, oh, I'm a bad person, I'm not handling this well, or why did I go down the shithole again, or what did I do to get here again? Just loving yourself and knowing, okay, I'm here, I'm still a worthy being, I'm still worthy of love, I am love. You can talk yourself back up that scale pretty easily by just loving yourself.
Yeah. I think that's love is the answer to Gary's, like, our relief and exhilaration, the same thing. I mean, I think they're both ultimately love, you know, if there's two emotions, love and fear.
Yeah.
And what's exhilarating to you may be scary to me.
Right.
Or vice versa.
And so to your other question, Gary, like, is relief the feeling to go for? I have relaxed about going for feeling, like certain feelings or trying to like create certain feelings, and have been just focusing on feeling whatever feeling is coming up, you know, and learning to appreciate each of them for their nuances and understand them and allow them. And then just sort of like moving through them, like Wendy, you talked about like just allowing it all to like wash over me and experience and appreciate it. So like when relief shows up, I appreciate it because it usually follows something that was not relief. You know?
Exactly.
But yeah. I think the chasing relief comes from like the feeling of feeling like we're, and the opposite. And so that's when it, I don't know.
All right. Let's go on to, this is going to be like a 3-hour podcast here. Yeah.
Because they're short little paragraphs and there's like 52 of them.
And we're through the first, we've been through one.
We've been through one. Okay.
Imagine the experience of psychological problems or anorexia. These experiences are not found in the non-physical. And so they are rather expansive. What the individual is doing is seeing themselves from a limited perspective. It appears to them as if their lives are wrong or their past experiences were wrong. They hold on to some resentment and the fear of the past being wrong causes them to live in a state of illusion. They cannot see the true reality. They only see life as an illusion of danger. Their view of themselves and the world is distorted. This is true of everyone to some degree.
Okay. So all of us, even those of us who know how things are really working out, mm-hmm. perceive some danger in the conditions, you know. And that danger is always an illusion. So that illusion manifests itself. You know, you can go down the rabbit hole and get really caught up in it and get really fearful and then develop really chronic issues regarding that. And I think that everyone who has a chronic issue, no matter what it is, has allowed this fear or this belief that there's danger in the outside conditions to overwhelm them. And yeah. And even though we theoretically know that there is no danger out there, you know, we're humans yeah. and we've been...
It seems real, yeah.
It seems real, mm-hmm. right.
Yeah.
So I think the big part of this is really analyzing what the fear is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I've been noticing, too, for myself with this, is, okay, somebody that's, you know, an alcoholic or anorexic or homeless or anything that society as a whole deems as not right yeah. or not, you know, not the standard of being good. I've been trying to really look at it as acknowledging these people for those roles that they're playing. They came in, like, with some intensity. I'm just a little wimp over here dealing with loss of love issues, and they're over there just, like, diving into these major, major things that are putting them in these positions that are just like, to me, that would seem so overwhelming, yet that's where they're at. And like, wow, you know, that's a really, that being is really, really pushing that expansion envelope, yeah. you know?
And we have to remember that they came in with the tools yeah. and equipment needed for that experience, yeah. right? And we can't see it because mm-hmm. we didn't come in with those
no.
tools.
Right, mm. right. Yeah. Different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's go to the next one.
If you saw yourself as you truly are, you would be living as the authentic version of yourself. Everyone sees themselves as a distorted version of their true self. This distortion often brings up fear. The more distorted the view, the more fear is prevalent in their lives. There's a direct correlation between the fear and the distortion. Ease the fear, and you correct much of the distortion. You, as a teacher, as a student of universal laws, and as a human living outside the specific distortion viewed by your young friends, will have a much easier time seeing their true reality. You can see them from a much higher perspective. That is, until you feel fear yourself.
So as long as you detach yourself from them mm-hmm. and see them as perfect, then you can see them from the higher perspective, and then you can receive the inspiration to offer whatever will be of the most mm-hmm. benefit to them.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's why it's easier to have relationships like this almost with strangers, mm-hmm. for lack of a better word, than for people that truly know you or know you know them, because you can remove all those judgments that you would normally right. have if you knew the person on a personal level.
Yeah. Well, if it was have your, less attachment.
Yeah, if it was your kid, you'd be like, exactly. I would feel so much better
yeah.
if you were
if
normal.
You would not, yeah, if you would get rid of this addiction, I would feel so much better.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so you really want to get, you see that as wrong because for right. you it is wrong. Yeah.
Versus embracing them and allowing them to work through their issue with your acceptance for them as who they truly are.
This mm-hmm. goes to everything.
Yeah.
Whether the child, the person is, you know, gay or
yep. misbehaving
or yeah. bipolar or on the spectrum. Or whatever, you know. Everyone chooses this sort of thing coming in, but can turn that thing into their superpower, whatever that is.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think a lot of that really is being authentic. That's being who you really are. Opens that valve of power, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And not worrying about judgments from other people.
Yeah.
Because basically that's, you know, why I would think, you know, why do you overdrink? Well, you're trying to numb something of how you feel, and it's usually about something somebody else has projected onto you. Like, you're not good enough.
Right.
You're too tall. Yeah. You're too short. You know, whatever it may be. It's something that's been projected upon them that they've allowed to define them.
And everyone's different, you know. Everyone has a different thing that, you know, that is their trajectory towards this. So even them looking at themselves saying, I should be able to control these urges, or I should be different than I am.
Yeah. Projecting on themselves.
Yeah.
They're projecting beliefs on themselves.
I love that idea that you just brought up, Gary, of like how it could actually be their superpower. That there was a question a while back on a roundtable from somebody, a grandma asking about her son with autism, and Joshua's answer that like, that it's not something wrong with these kids, that they have come here as this for a very specific reason, you know? That idea for me was revolutionary, and it totally coincides with what I've been doing lately. Which is also like, I mean, Joshua's talked to me about it with regard to consistency and irresponsibility, but like things that I perceive as my weaknesses, how those could actually be my strengths,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
And that is something that I've been focusing on a lot lately. And it's so beneficial. I mean, for me, I've reached a point where I can be aware of these things and know that if I want to change them, I can, but also see how, like, in so many ways, like, it serves me that I've come in this way, you know, that. It's so much more empowering than to think,
yes,
like, oh, before I can be worthy or before I can be good enough, I have to change all these things,
yes,
about me that are just inherently wrong.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
And how cool is that to just flip a switch from disempowered to empowered?
Mm-hmm.
Looking at something just at a different point of view, you can suddenly become empowered by that, mm-hmm, versus, mm-hmm, judging yourself as being less than.
It just means that you have control of the perspective.
Yeah.
And that perspective allows you to flip the switch from limiting to empowered.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And that's all it is.
That's
it's so
it
simple.
It's so
simple, not easy. Simple,
yeah. Simple, not easy.
Yeah, put that on a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Okay.
Huh. If you are very close to them, like their parents are, you will feel fear. You will feel fear. In that feeling of fear, your view of them is also distorted. If you stand further back as a friend, you will feel less fear than the parents, but still you will feel some fear and your view will continue to be distorted. So then, the very best thing you can do is stand as far back as you can by knowing that they are perfect as they are, that this life is an experience of self-discovery, and that they are not doing anything wrong. You can see them from the highest perspective possible. In feeling good and maintaining your alignment, you have access to inspired information and ideas.
I like that paragraph.
Well, that's the whole point.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's the whole point. Get yourself far enough back to view from a perspective that allows you to feel good, basically.
Right.
Is what you're,
and
you
then
feel,
receive
yeah, that's
the inspiration to say
right,
the things that will be of benefit. Instead of in fear, you receive the urges to change them.
Yeah.
That's a really, I feel like that's a really powerful message in that paragraph. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it makes sense in this context, and it's easier, or it can feel easier, I understand, in this relationship that she has with these people that are online and distant. But like, what I'm finding is that I am practicing doing that in my real friendships, you know, where like releasing some of the attachment and standing farther back. And sometimes it feels uncomfortable, like I'm not being a good friend because I'm not having the typical sympathy or empathy,
right,
you know? So that's kind of it's an uncomfortable thing sometimes, but I find it's a lot more beneficial when I can do that, when I can keep that wider perspective, even with the people really close to me.
Well, we're confusing this idea of love. In love, mm-hmm, we think, well, we should be there helping them, right? That's our responsibility to help them.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Nobody loves us more than Joshua, you know, this feeling I have that they love us so much.
Mm-hmm.
But they see us as perfect and not in need of any help. And so they never tell anyone what to do. They work to change the perspective is all, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they step as far back as possible.
Yeah.
And that is the true definition of love, this acceptance of who we are.
Exactly. It's the acceptance. If you can just accept them for who they are in that moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
All right.
That's a lot in that paragraph.
Mm-hmm. You are a teacher. You are a master teacher. You have come here to teach. Your own fears have kept you from this identity for most of your life. Here you are now somehow in this online community that you love, with the opportunity to teach and to guide. How do you teach? From the stance of alignment. What do you say? only that which helps the students see their life and their world from a higher perspective. You do not tell them what to do. You guide them to a higher perspective. You do not agree with what is wrong. You show them how everything is right, to the extent to which they can perceive the rightness of certain ideas and philosophies.
Mm. Yeah.
Yep. I mean, certainly if you're in a really deep, depressed state, you're not going to be able to see that that's right. But you can see certain little aspects of things that are right.
And they have to have at some level, they have to have the desire to see it right, the desire to make a change.
Okay.
If you saw them as perfect and that this is an experience that accentuates the vast difference between clarity and confusion, then you would know that the experience itself is valuable and that there is no reason to resist the experience. They can understand that the experience itself has provided them with a perspective that has not been experienced in this way before. Now that they have had the experience, they can choose to live life in a new way. This will enable them to understand the difference between their old approach to life and the new one. You have embarked on a similar journey of exploration yourself, and so has everyone else on this earth. We have worked with you to show you that your exploration of life was valid, unique, and absolutely integral to the overall physical experience of this reality. You are unique and worthy, and your experience of physical reality is as valid as everyone else's. All we did was show you how to see that for yourself. Now that you have experienced life in the way that you intended, you can choose to experience it in another way. The difference between the two experiences is another layer of expansion, and it is exhilarating.
Okay, so that's the purpose here. You go through, you come into this reality, you choose a trajectory, you face some contrast, and this is the contrast you intended to face, to explore prior to your birth, right? Once you've done that, you can then change or decide to explore something else. You can just explore another level of that, or you can just focus on what you prefer and explore that. Even if you don't, your whole life, boy, this actually talks about this other question we're talking about that Ella has. But even if you, okay, so for instance, my mother. My mother's life is super interesting. She was born into a wealthy family in South Africa. She was shipped off to boarding school like many South African kids were. And she never really knew her parents, especially her father. And when she was 16, her and her mother went to England, and she was in boarding school in England, or at school in England with her mother. And her father died. And she didn't know until a year later when they go back. No one told her. Can you imagine that?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So she's dealing with that, right? And then she marries my dad, and my dad ships her to America. Now, my mom only has her mom left. There's no other siblings. There's no other family. It's this experience of life with no family, right? And she basically married the first guy that she dated. Had us and had no idea how to deal with us because she was in boarding school. She was never around a family, right? And so she let my dad pretty much dictate how we were. And she went over the top because she was afraid of him criticizing her and how she was mothering us. And so she was overprotective. And then she couldn't take it anymore, trying to figure things out. And then she ended up moving to New York and becoming totally independent. And then she blossomed in that time period and had this experience. And it was really expansive and fun and interesting. And got married again and moved around a little bit. And then got divorced. And then decided she wanted to go back and live in South Africa. And so she did, and had friends there and was doing things. And then she had a stroke and had to be taken care of by three women. And that was the mothering and parenting experience that she never got as a child. Right?
Oh, wow.
So even though she had lived this whole life, she now got manifested this other experience where she was really taken care of as a baby would be. Yeah. And so even though I wouldn't, nobody would want to have a stroke where they're half paralyzed. For her, from this perspective, I could see how that was something that she needed to experience. Right.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Wow.
And.
And how she manifested that.
Yeah. I mean, she manifested a lot of things out of that too, because also, Wade and I weren't traveling back and forth to see her when she was there. I saw her once, twice since she had moved back before the stroke, and then after the stroke, we were there every year. Each of us off and on, you know. So it's interesting how I can see now that that was a beneficial experience for her. And a lot of times we judge these things as that they're totally wrong, you know.
When
Jerry died, he had a lingering death that from a disease, and had he died in a car accident, Esther said she would have just quit this whole thing, right? But this gave her time to, you know, say goodbye and get comfortable, not comfortable, but, you know, okay with it. And they developed some other, you know, the streaming of some of the events and stuff like that from it. So we got to see what's the benefit in these things for the people. That's the bad thing.
Yeah, it's interesting because that's our first thing is what's wrong? Oh, my gosh, why is that wrong?
Yeah.
Versus how is this right?
Yeah. In so many things. In everything. We're always doing that. Yeah. Okay, let's go to the next one.
Imagine living in a wheelchair, believing you cannot walk. You are so sure you can't walk that you do not even try. We come along and tell you that indeed you can walk. You do not have to walk if you do not want to. If you want to, you can sit in that wheelchair for the rest of your life. There is nothing wrong with that experience because it is an expansive one. When you make your transition to the non-physical, you will be overjoyed with that experience. But that experience is already had, and now you can experience the opposite. You can walk. We show you another perspective. We tell you that there is nothing wrong with you. We allow you to come to the realization that you are perfect and this is all just a game. Then you slowly start thinking differently and your fear of walking is eased. You start to feel better and you receive the inspiration to try to walk. Soon you stand and later you take your first step. The experience of that first step is invigorating and exhilarating. The contrast from the old approach to life of sitting in the wheelchair to the new approach of walking is fascinating and fun and also challenging. Do you now see the purpose of life?
Guys, do you now see the purpose of life?
To experience.
Well, you go through this experience of your trajectory. Once you've had that experience, you don't have to keep having it and having it and having it and having it.
Mm-hmm,
you can now say, yes, I've had an experience, and you can go off in the opposite direction of that. And the opposite direction will be exhilarating because you'll see the difference between the way you live life before and the way you live life now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the difference. And you'll see that difference in the non-physical, but you can see it now, too, in life. Because after living a certain way for so long, you can say, okay, I want to choose something different.
Yeah, and the power is just in the... okay, I've had this experience, and now I want to choose this one rather than this experience is wrong. I need this other experience. Right. You know?
Exactly.
That's the power in
exactly.
It.
Exactly.
Okay. The version of you that can walk exists now, even when the experience of confinement to a wheelchair is occurring in this moment. There is nothing wrong with the experience of the wheelchair, and nothing better about the experience of walking. It's simply something you want. You can have anything you want in this reality, but you must do the work to become the vibrational match. The reason you are not walking has to do with the difference of beliefs that the walking version of you has compared to the wheelchair-bound version of you. You are moving from wheelchair to walking, from fear to love. The desire to walk was a reality granted by the universe as soon as you asked. The universe will lead you every step of the way. You might resist every step of the way. The more you sit, the longer it will take, and the more emotionally painful it will be. The less you resist, the easier and quicker it will be. You see, it is simply up to you.
I think that sit was a typo. It should be resist. The more you resist, the longer it will take, and the more emotionally painful it will be. But that's funny because it's a wheelchair analogy, so I didn't catch that.
Yeah.
It made sense to me.
The more you resist,
it really made sense to me. Because I feel like I have been doing a lot of sitting rather than like getting up and walking.
Yeah.
And it's been emotionally painful. I'm like, why is this happening? It's because I'm just choosing to sit.
Yeah, you're choosing to sit.
Yeah.
And you can sit there. That's fine, right?
Yeah.
And if you resist all the manifestation events that are coming to you that are helping you get into that belief system, and if a manifestation event comes and you're not looking at the limiting belief that causes you to feel the fear, well, you're missing the opportunity there.
Yeah.
That's all you're doing, right?
Yeah, definitely.
That's a good answer. The version of you that can walk exists now. So the version of you that is, you know, whatever, exists
unlimited,
now.
Yeah.
But that version of you has a different set of beliefs. And so you just got to make your way in belief by belief by belief over to this version. Mm. So easy.
Right.
So simple. Not easy. Simple.
Imagine that you have a tennis racket and a tennis ball. You believe that it is wrong for the ball to hit the ground. Gravity is causing the ball to move toward the ground. You think this is bad, and so you keep the ball from hitting the ground by bouncing it in the air. Eventually, you cannot keep the ball in the air any longer, and so it hits the ground. You consider yourself a failure, because you could not keep the ball in the air. But gravity is just a law, and when the ball hits the ground, it is simply abided by this law. Nothing is wrong. If you had a higher perspective and understood that gravity would continue eternally to bring the ball to the ground, you would make a game of hitting that ball. You would make a game of hitting that ball up in the air. You would count how many times you could hit that ball before it landed on the ground. You would break new records and congratulate yourself for your wonderful achievements. It would be fun.
Do you understand that analogy? Law of attraction is the same thing. Mm-hmm. Law of attraction is always bringing you a match to what you're vibrating, right? Mm-hmm. What you're emitting in your vibration. It's always doing it, right? And so as you play with who you're being, basically, how you want to, you know, all that of it really comes down to who you're being. If you're being who you really are, totally authentic and who you really are, then this reality matches that thing that who you really are. And so when you're not being who you authentically are, your reality comes and hits you back in the face. Mm-hmm. You know, showing you that this is what you're not, who you're being now. And it's not that that's wrong, you know, and you don't get frustrated when the reality shows you who you are in these manifestation events. You just see what you can do. Okay, let's try it again. Let's try it again. Let's bounce that ball up in the air again. Let's try it again. Yep. It's always going to happen, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like Abraham always says, you're never going to get it done. So just enjoy the journey.
Your life is about bouncing balls in the air. And some days you'll hit that ball in the air 100 times, and some days you'll miss it on the first time. Right?
Exactly. Yeah.
And you'll get better and better and better and better at doing it. If you realize that this is a game and not...
oh my God, I dropped the ball.
Right. Yeah. That means that I'm a bad person, right?
Yeah.
You drop the ball. If you think that the gravity means something about you, it's the same saying law of attraction means something about you.
I had a conversation with Astrid yesterday, and we were talking about all kinds of things, but one of the things she said that really stuck with me, because I've done it too so much of my life, she was like, it's so funny and so silly, but my entire life I've always taken things that I can't do to mean something about me, you know, like as if, because I didn't have this innate ability to do something that meant that I was a terrible person or not worthy or whatever. But like now I realize that if I want to do something, I can practice it or learn how to do it, or I can just be okay with not knowing how to do it. You know, there's some things that I just don't need to know how to do. And I love that because it takes so much pressure off, you know, and relating to this paragraph, the idea that like, there isn't really any failure. It's just things happening according to the laws of the universe, and we get to choose, you know, whether we want to keep playing or do something different or
make it mean something.
Right.
You know,
choice.
Right.
Choice.
It doesn't mean anything.
It comes down to choice.
Yeah.
How you choose to perceive it.
Yeah.
All right. Last paragraph.
The same thing is happening in your reality. You are playing a game with the law of attraction. You are asking for things and how approach to life. Oh, how, what? Okay. You are asking for things and how you approach life determines what you receive. If you think things are wrong, you get one reality, a resistant reality. If you think things are right, you get an easier reality until you once again think things are wrong. You cannot fail because this is just a game. And even though you are a master of this game, it is still challenging. You can resist how you play the game, and this will make it seem more difficult than it is. Or you can relax and have fun knowing that there is no wrong way to play. And the more you play, the more challenging the game becomes.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what you want.
Yeah.
Or you would quickly lose interest if this game became too easy. Do you still play tic-tac-toe? With our love, we are Joshua.
I like their sense of humor. Yeah.
Right.
I like that.
You would not want to be in a game that's not challenging.
No.
And how you play the game doesn't, or what happens in the game doesn't mean anything about you.
No.
The thought comes to me that when we were doing the escape rooms, Bruce was really intense in these things, you know. And I don't care. Doesn't matter if you get out or don't get out, I don't care. Doesn't matter if I find a clue or not find a clue, I don't care. And he is really intense. And to him, it really matters if we get out. And he attaches meaning to whether he gets out.
Yeah.
If he gets out, it means he's smart. And if he doesn't get out, it doesn't mean he's smart, right? Which has nothing to do with that, because it really comes down to how many people are playing the game and who they are.
Yeah.
Because everyone, you can't get out of there by yourself no matter what you do. You have to have the other people.
Right.
But for me, it was fun for him too, as long as we got out. It was more fun for him, right? Because it's like the same thing of rooting for your football team.
Yeah.
If you're really invested in this, what happens at the end, it's a lot more fun.
Right.
You're going to feel a lot better when they win and a lot worse when they lose, right?
So true.
It's a silly thing. So it that's really part is. Of the game then. I guess. But you want it to be challenging. You don't want it to be too easy.
Yeah.
You think you do.
Right. It's possibly even why things happen in our lives, because we've got to a point where it is no longer challenging, that we've just been coasting along or whatever. It's like, all right, you know, this is getting boring on some level. We're thinking this is getting boring, and boom, you get a manifestation event to challenge you.
Or you get an inspiration to call you to something.
Okay, yeah. Mm.
You know? Mm. And that inspiration is going to feel scary.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. And you're going to second guess it every step of the way.
Yeah. I've just gotten to the point now where things have been popping up, and it's like, okay, I'm pushing through this fear. Here I go. Look at me go. Look at me. It's like something stupid, you know, but it's like just pushing it. Not stupid, but, you know, just small in the course of life. First world problems, let's say. You know, I can do this. And it's like, like you said, Gary, it's exhilarating. Yeah. It's like, ooh, you know, I did it.
And then you see how it turns out.
Yeah, and I can build momentum by each little time. These little ones, bigger.
Yeah. Very cool.
Huh. It's good stuff.
All right. I've run out of words. You know, men only have so many words a day. I think I've used them all.
Sorry, Lily. Oh, well, maybe you're welcome, Lily.
Yeah. No, she's definitely sorry. She comes home. She comes home from talking all day long and keeps talking. And I'm done talking, you know. I must say no more than 7 words the rest of the night. No, probably more than that. But it feels like it, yeah. Mm. All right. So what else is going on? Anything?
What else is going on?
Kyla has a meditation event on Monday.
I do have a meditation event on Monday. I'm very excited.
You should live stream that so people can.
I thought about it, you know?
Yeah.
Or at least filming it. I have a little handy cam that I thought about setting up.
Yeah,
yeah,
definitely film it.
Maybe I will film it this time and then think about live streaming it next time. Cause I have a photographer friend who's letting me use her studio, and she said that I can use it anytime. So I'm going to try to make it a recurring thing for as long as it's fun.
Film it and then, or even post it live on, do that live thing on Facebook.
Facebook.
Yeah, I've thought about that.
Yeah. For sure. Why not?
Yeah.
And, I think you should do it live.
He thinks
play recording.
You should. Okay, 2 keywords. He thinks you should.
My inspiration is to tell you to do it live.
Okay.
That's the inspiration.
I'm feeling the fear. I may choose to sit this one. We'll see. I don't know. Okay. I can analyze that limiting belief and see where I land on it.
I did a meditation in a guru's studio with my mother and a group of people in New York City in 1977. And I remember the whole thing.
Wow.
And what it was is you felt this ball of light starting at your toes and slowly, you know, sparkling through coming up your foot, coming your
tickling
ankle.
Up your groin.
Going your knees, and the flames getting hotter. And then when they're at your knees, they start at your fingertips, and they go up, and the flames are just coming up. You know, your eyes are closed. And then they just come up, and you can just feel the flame going, and you can feel it going up your neck and in your jaw and past your eyeballs. And then there's this fire in your head. Your whole head is shining light coming out of it. And then the top of your head opens up, and a beam shoots up straight through the ceiling. And you travel up this beam, and now you can look down at yourself and everyone in the class and all this, you know.
Mm.
And you go up, and you can go through the ceiling, and now you can see the building. And it's nighttime in New York. And so now you can see all the lights of the city, and you go higher, and he's doing it very slowly, of course, and higher, and higher, and higher, and then you look up, and you can see the moon. And so you're going to go around the moon, and you go flying, and we're getting closer to the moon, we're getting closer, and then you go, and now we're getting sucked around the moon, and you can see the moon all close up, and you come around the moon, and now you see the Earth from far away, and it's a big, you know, blue ball of light, and you're going closer and closer into it, and then you come right back down, right through the ceiling, you know, into your head.
Wow.
And I remember the whole thing. And this guy was interesting. He was a Indian guru, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to a movie with him one time, my brother, my mother, and I. And before the movie started, he had a bag of M&Ms. And he says, pick one out, put it in your hand, don't let me see it, and think of the color. And he guessed it every single time, every one of them.
Wow.
And they said, now, I'm going to hold it, and you think, and I'll think of the color, and you do it. And my brother and I, he gets it every time.
Hmm.
Wow.
Like, isn't it weird? Yeah.
Very.
No, that's
like
interesting.
It's like this beginning of my trajectory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
13 or something.
And the guru's taking your mom to the movie.
Well, yeah. Maybe they're having tantric sex. Probably.
Daddy guru.
Yeah. Maybe it was my dad.
Maybe. Your spiritual dad.
All right. Was this recorded? Did we not hit stop? Are you people listening to this?
Did
we just say that for 6 million people?
Are we making this all up?
Yeah. Who are you calling you people?
All right. Have a wonderful rest of the week. We'll be back again for Joshua Live on Monday.
And
until then, keep in touch with us through the website, theteachingsofjoshua.com, or through our private Facebook page, Friends of Joshua. And other than that, have a great weekend. We'll see y'all later. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us on the Teachings of Joshua Roundtable. Remember, you are loved more than you can imagine, by more than you could ever count. We'll see you next week.